Hey, you. With a rhinestone dog collar, between us dogs, I just convinced my human to upgrade to a new home with a 1,200-square-foot bathroom. I think she called it a yard. With Wells Fargo's 3% down mortgage option, my human realized a new home was within reach, and I only gave her puppy eyes once. Get your human to talk to a mortgage consultant or learn more at wellsfargo.com/woof.
Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Down payments as low as 3% on a fixed-rate loan require mortgage insurance. Ask a home mortgage consultant about loan requirements. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., Equal Housing Lender, NMLS, RID 399801.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that all brains, as human beings start to develop in the womb, are female? Today, we're looking at the female brain and the male brain, as well as how we can bring them together to create the love brain that so many of us desire. Get ready to be amazed by all that you can discover about your own brain. Welcome to Full Power Living. We're the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host. We have two chats for you, one on the emotionalpro.com radio page and the other on the blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living page. We also have a toll-free number, 800-630-7858, and those are posted on the chats. You know, we all rely on our brains to run our lives, and in recent decades, we've been discovering a lot more about the brain than we ever knew before. For example, scientists used to think that once the brain was formed, it didn't change. Now we talk about neuroplasticity and lifelong learning. But did you know that at the very beginning of life, all our brains start out female? And do you know what really is different about the male brain and the female brain that can make it difficult for us to understand and live with one another? Well, you can find out more about this from our guest today, Dr. Luann Brizendine, who is author of The Female Brain and also of The Male Brain. She's a practicing clinician, best-selling author, public speaker, and media commentator. She specializes in the relationship dynamics that result from the neurobiology of male and female brains. In fact, she completed her degree in neurobiology at UC Berkeley, then graduated from Yale School of Medicine, and interned and did her residency at Harvard Medical School. And she's served on both the faculties of Harvard University and the University of California in San Francisco. Now, she's at UCSF, University of California in San Francisco, and she pursues active clinical teaching, writing, and research activities, and she also has founded the Women's Mood and Hormone Clinic in 1994, and she's still the director of that clinic. Her first book, The Female Brain, is being translated into 26 languages, and its follow-up, The Male Brain, is now out as well. So, Dr. Luann Brizendine, welcome to Full Power Living. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, people make a lot of jokes and complaints about the differences between the sexes. And when we do, Dr. Luann, we're really talking about differences in the male and female brain. And there are real differences, and they do affect our interactions and our ability to get along. And I'm wondering, besides the fact that that's obviously probably fascinating to everybody, what drew you to look at this issue, this area?
Well, I think as a woman who's had men in my life over time, I've become very, very interested for my own personal reasons, of course. But when I was an undergraduate at UC Berkeley, I was very interested in the hormonal effects on behavior, because many of those were just being discovered there by professors that I was taking classes from. And it was just a time of incredible excitement about the behavioral effects of different hormones. And I discovered, of course, you know, that testosterone has a robust effect both on the male brain, also on the female brain. It's what causes us to be interested in sex. It's what causes the male brain to pursue fertile females, so to speak. And so that just really captivated my interest way back in the 1970s when I was an undergraduate and all my professors were kind of discovering how hormones get secreted and how they affect males and females.
Wow. and you've made a lifetime work of it so far. Well, I had the opportunity to read some of your work, and you do a fascinating job of telling us the differences in your books. But I'd like you to, if you will, give us, and this is a big job, give us a brief review of the some of the differences between the male and female brain. In particular, start with the fact that all brains are female in the beginning.
Yes, right. And so if your audience wants to read one page in the female brain, it will help them get the story right. They can read page 39 in the female brain. And if your women want to read the male brain, they can read page 33. That kind of gives a synopsis on both of those pages. So
well, thank you very much. Let's go on to something else.
That's right. That's the cliff notes. That's the cliff notes of the cliff notes. So that makes it easy. At any rate, we have to know that male and female brains are more alike than different. After all, we are the same species. But let's take a look, and I can give you a little synopsis of how they're different. And, you know, we all start off, and at the moment of conception, we either get XX genes from one from our mother and one from our father, or we end up with the dad giving a Y, mom giving an X, and then we're male. So at that moment of conception, there we are, boom. And if by time 8 weeks of fetal life, the tiny testicles have started to secrete so much testosterone, they're almost at adult male levels, and it starts to change the brain into the male brain. So by the time we're all born, we either have a male brain or a female brain.
Hmm. And so what difference does what are the differences? The female brain then, as I recall, starts to develop. It gets a big influx of estrogen for a long while after immediately after birth, and it develops certain areas of the brain that are not so developed in the male brain.
Right. So what happened at that 8 weeks and then on through pregnancy when all that big tsunami of testosterone hits the male brain is it makes certain areas of the male brain grow larger, and that the main area is an area called the area for sexual pursuit, and that's a technical name of an area, believe it or not, in the hypothalamus, which, remember, the hypothalamus is that stimulates our desire to eat, our desire to sleep, and all of our kind of sex, and in the male brain, the desire to pursue fertile females. So that area is 2.5 times larger in the male brain because of that big tsunami of testosterone during fetal development. Now, in the female, she develops, as we say, without the testosterone influence on her brain, and not until she's about 1 month old does the ovaries start secreting lots of estrogen. That then starts to affect her and her brain development. And the areas in the female brain that have been known to be a bit different are, you know, areas that have more cells in them that have to do with noticing emotions and mirror neurons that are able to mimic and feel the emotions on other people. And that starts off at a fairly young age for girls. And by about the age of 20 to 24 months, you know, little girls start to have many more words than little boys. And by about 36 months old, little girls actually have something like double the number of words that little boys have. And little girls are always, if you think about Eleanor McAfee's work from down at Stanford for 40 years, she actually looked and dissected all of the play in the preschool kids. And watched how little girls play versus little boys. Little boys are like, come on, guys, let's get them. They're running around. They're basically chasing the enemy. They want to be the hero. Little girls will sit and do what's called relationship play, like you be the doctor and I'll be the patient, or you be the mommy, I'll be the daddy. Little boys will sit and play along with that assigned relationship play that little girls do for, you know, for a few minutes, and they get bored, and then they're off and running with the rest of the guys. So those are things we understand and know from our observations of children, and nobody teaches them to do that type of what's called gender-specific play, do they?
Well, that's a question that I've often been fascinated with because, if a somebody has a little boy or a little girl, they may immediately start bringing in female toys or male toys, footballs and so forth. And so I have had a question for a long time about how much of this is nurture and how much of it is nature. And what you're saying is it's nature. This is the way we're born.
Well, I think it's nature and nurture, of course, but the nature-nurture debate actually is dead because everything, I think the really cool part of neuroscience, what we discovered is that every experience that we all have in our lives actually changes our brain circuits. For example, if you have someone who learns to play the violin kind of casually versus someone who's actually practicing 8 hours a day, the area of the person practicing 8 hours a day, the area of their brain for playing the violin becomes eight times as large in their brain than in kind of the casual players. So anything we use, it's kind of like a muscle. You know, you are working out in the gym with your weights and you can build a muscle. Well, the brain is the same. The things that you do in your life, experiences you have, you know, whether your parents tried to get you to do different things or play different kinds of things. So there is a piece of how we train our children. I remember my son, I mean, for my girlfriends and I, remember when we're 20, 21 years old and we're all in college and we're talking about, at least in my generation, the 70s at Berkeley, all of us were talking about how when we had sons, we were going to give them gender-neutral toys and we weren't going to give the boys any violent toys. They grow up to be more sensitive males. And that our future daughters-in-law would thank us for the sensitive husbands we raised for them, right? That was our story. Until we had boys of our own. I can remember giving my son a doll for Christmas when he's about four, and he unwraps the paper, ripping it off, and pulls her out, and immediately grabs her by the torso and is using her legs as swords.
Oh, my gosh.
That woke me up. I thought, oh dear. I didn't. You know, you don't train them to do that. Of course, they sort of come wrapped that way. But you can influence your children's brains by what you do and don't have them do to some degree. So, sort of, we're wired to be more likely to go in the male direction or female direction from birth on, or from even in the fetal life on, but you can influence your children to some degree in lots of ways by how you educate them.
Okay, so I'm going to take this opportunity to ask a very personal question that has fascinated me for a while. When my mother, my birth mother, was pregnant with me, my father left for World War II, leaving her alone to give birth and move a couple of states to a home and so forth. She turned out not to be a very attentive mother. In fact, eventually my sister and I were taken away from her. She left me with babysitters with whooping cough when I was 6 months old, for example, and didn't show up again for 2 or 3 days. So she was not there. And so I had a sister who was 22 months older than me, a very powerful little girl, who essentially was my caretaker. And what I'm curious about is that I have long said my brain doesn't work like other people's brains. And also I think that my brain is more masculine than most women that I know. And I'm curious if that early experience would have an impact on that.
You know, one of the things we do know is that stress, what's called stress from the environment, which is what you had in spades, you didn't have the comforting, nurturing, what we call the average expected maternal experience. You didn't have that. And so your system didn't have a way to kind of, you know how you're running the car in fifth gear and then, you know, you can put it in neutral and you can relax for a while and then you may go back. But you didn't have the experience of that kind of relaxed state very much. So your whole system was probably overamped in survival mode a lot of your early childhood.
Yes.
And obviously it just speaks to how strong your whole system was that you survived.
Mm-hmm.
So your natural genetics and your natural brain and physiology wiring made it so that you could survive. And of course, you know, lots of infants are born quite very helpless in humans, and they part of the way the female brain is wired to take care of helpless infants is thought to be, because we are so helpless as humans up until, you know, the age of 2 years old, to not really be able to survive without the help of others. So you, in terms of what that does to your whole hormonal system, what that does, so the stress that you were under certainly did change your brain circuits in certain ways. Now, some of that may have actually been for the better. That may make you more scrappy, more.
Ask my husband; he'll say it's true.
So, then some of it may have been detrimental in terms of just, you know, your ability to kind of regulate your own well-being and stress and comfort zone. You know, ability to self-nurture sometimes is something you have to learn more and more of all your life. So you may be very scrappy, but there may be a part of your self-care and your self-nurturing that may need, you know, needs constant attending to and upgrade.
Very interesting, very interesting. So it really could have a big difference. You talk about survival skills. I have memory of making my own scrambled eggs on an open gas stove flame at the age of two. So there were ways in which I know that I did survive.
So you were really a talented, lots of children would not have survived, but clearly you had the endogenous talented wiring to be able to be quite adaptive to take care of yourself. So that's, you know, some people will have that, and then those experiences reinforce your ability to do that, which is, you're a good example of how our experiences reinforce parts of our personality and our natural genetic wiring to be, to survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really good. Thank you. I've always wondered about that, so I thank you for responding to that. So
that's made you who you are, and these experiences make all of us who we are. Some of those things help us be, you know, more talented than others because we've had these experiences, and some things are detrimental. So it's a balance we all have to work with all of our lives. But it's a good example how the experiences we have become part of our brain.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that has been important for me is to get out of the victim mode of this happened to me and oh, woe is me, to the place where, you know what, some of this may not have been so much fun, but by and large, I learned a lot, like empathy, or I learned, as you're saying, self-sufficiency. I learned what I can do and so forth. So I think if you don't have a good beginning necessarily, it's important to get out of that victim mode and see what the lesson is or what you could have learned from it.
Right, right, exactly. Because mm-hmm. in the end, we all have to take responsibility for our own lives. I mean, and we can't just spend our life blaming others or playing the victim role. It's not very helpful.
All right. Well, we're up to our first break. And when we come back, I want to talk with you about what impact this has on what we're good at and not good at as males and females. All right?
Sounds great.
Good. We're talking today with Luann Brizendine, MD. She's the author of The Female Brain and the Male Brain. You're listening to Full Power Living, so stay with us.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
How difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want? To take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes? Or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro. offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have just a few announcements. Next week on February 9th, we're featuring Suzanne Taylor Shire as she talks to us about soul reunion, our return home from separation. She says that our deepest longing is to be in union with infinite love, and she offers to help us understand how to do that, and it's going to be a great follow-up to today's show and a good lead-up to Valentine's Day. So be sure to join us for next week's excellent show. You can see our upcoming guests listed at the top of our radio show page at emotionalpro.com, and we certainly urge you and encourage you to listen to all of our episodes of Full Power Living. Remember, you can talk with us right now, 800-630-7858, and we know you have questions about the differences between the male and female brain. And our chats are on emotionalpro.com or the blogtalkradio.com/FPL page. And if you miss our show live at any time, you can subscribe to iTunes or listen to the archives on either of those pages. We want also to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Thanks for telling your friends and family about our show. So our guest today is Luann Brizendine. She's a practicing clinician, a best-selling author, a public speaker, a media commentator, a mom. She's got a lot of hats. And she specializes in the relationship dynamics that result from the neurobiology of male and female brains. Now, Luann, as the founder and director of the Women's Mood and Hormone Clinic that operates at the University of California, San Francisco Medical Center, I'm interested, curious about, I know you said that early on in your studies you were interested in the effect that hormones have on us. Is that the carryover to open this clinic?
Indeed it was. I often have couples who come into my clinic, and usually because the woman is coming complaining of various kinds of hormonal difficulties. But I'll tell you the one thing. I'll tell you the take-home message. Here's the bottom line. Let's say I have Mary and John sitting in front of me in my office, and, you know, she's there and he's there, and they're having difficulty in their relationship, and I will turn to him, and I'll say, John, you know, how do you know that Mary loves you?
Wow.
And he'll say, oh, because she wants to have sex with me. And Mary, I can.
I know where we're going here.
The look on Mary's face is, you can imagine, when I turn to her and I say, okay, Mary, how do you know that John loves you? And she'll say, oh, because he wants to talk to me. The look on John's face is, you know, so it's often an epiphany to the woman that having sex with him means that she loves him. It often there's this disconnect sometimes between, you know, what the meanings of our behavior and sometimes our gendered behavior is to the person that we're married to or we love or who's our partner. So when I talk about the love brain and how the male and female brains come at this differently, that's kind of the nexus of the whole issue right there.
Yeah, and it can create a lot of difficulties. Now, that kind of brings me back to what I was getting at before the break, which is that the influx of the estrogen and the influx of the testosterone creating different areas or strengthening different areas or enlarging different areas of the brain, that means that our tendency is to focus on different things. Like women are basically focusing on relationship and getting along and, like you say, talking because we're very verbal. And men are what? They have 2.5 times...
So let's rewind the tape just a little bit to the men in our life when they turn 11 to 13 and they're starting to go out of that quiet time of childhood in terms of hormones, and all of a sudden the switch to puberty gets thrown, and at 9 years old, the amount of testosterone a boy has in his system versus 15 goes up 250% in that
wow.
time. So the testosterone fuel is running his brain circuits, particularly those ones that were made and laid down the networks when he was in fetal life. All of a sudden, those are flipped on, and it has 250% more fuel. And that's going to be running the sexual pursuit, the sexual interest, and all of our lives, males and females, on average, a male has 10 times more testosterone than the female does. And we females, the good news is we have testosterone too, of course, that are made from our ovaries and our adrenal glands, and it stimulates our sexual interest too, particularly actually the 2 or 3 days before ovulation. So about between days 10 and 14 of our menstrual cycle, we get a wham of testosterone that makes us much more flirtatious and interested in sex. So men, take note of that. Track those 10 to 14 days.
And don't forget the birth control.
Those are your days to get lucky, right?
Right.
So at any rate, that is kind of the dance that sometimes goes on between couples, is this powered a lot by our hormones. And that's what's so interesting from my perspective, that a woman will call me who's usually in her mid-40s, and she'll say, "Dr. Brizendine, you got to save my marriage. My husband says if I don't start having more sex with him, he doesn't want to live in a sexless marriage, and he's going to leave me." That's often the initial call in my clinic that I get. So then I will measure her testosterone, see where that is, and meet with a couple and see what's going on in their relationship. And it could be many things that, of course, are going on there, and always is many things. But if her... being trained as a psychiatrist and, you know, being trained also in the psychoanalytic psychotherapy model of training in my years of residency at Harvard, I feel very badly about what my profession has done to women over the years. They've put her on the couch, right, and they've said, "What's wrong with you that you're frigid?" And nobody ever bothered to measure her testosterone level. And lots of these women have almost non-measurable, they have such a tiny amount of the testosterone by the time they come to my office that there's no way they can have any sexual interest, and they've lost their orgasm because testosterone helps the orgasm happen faster or happen at all. So a lot of these sort of biological underpinnings of our lives and our bodies and really start to have a big effect on our relationships. And so I feel appalled and horrified at what my profession has, you know, said women's frigidity was their own fault and it was some kind of blockage in their mind, and, you know, that's clearly not true.
Well, that's really wonderful. I'm sure that's going to help a lot of people. You remind me that today is my grandson Andrew's 13th birthday.
How exciting. He's right in the middle of that, what we call
right.
the testosterone tsunami.
right. So bon voyage, Andrew, and happy birthday. So I'm curious, when you say women come in with a tiny amount of testosterone, and yet we produce the testosterone in our bodies, are we having trouble with our glands, or is it where we're focusing our attention, or what?
No, there's a bunch of things that decrease women's testosterone. First of all, the perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how long that lasts? That's kind of the lead up to menopause, when the ovaries retire, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
So the average age of menopause is 51, and the average of starting the perimenopause, which is when the ovaries sort of start to sputter a bit, is sometimes the 9 or 10 years before that. So very earliest signs for women can be in their early 40s. And by their, so the ovaries the ovaries make 90% of a woman's testosterone during her fertile years. And the adrenal glands make about 10%. So as the woman goes through this, she's making less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on in the normal biology. It's not every woman, of course, that has it fall so low that they have these other problems of losing their sex drive or losing their orgasm or losing their what we call genital sensitivity, which are all caused by and enhanced by hormones. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's a reasonable idea for couples therapists, too, to kind of know about this, right? And they can at least have their female of the couple get a blood test, go to their doctor and get a blood test for their testosterone level make sure that, yeah.
That's a really great suggestion, and wow, what a relief that can be to some couples who are often, I'm sure you run into this, they're often sniping at each other, being angry with one another, blaming and so forth. Because
when the woman loses her interest in her partner too, she feels like maybe she's fallen out of love with him.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe. I mean, she's just, you know, and he feels like, you know, we go back to the John and Mary example. She's not wanting to have sex with him anymore. He feels she doesn't love him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can see where that could be a downward spiral.
So what do you do in your clinic when you run into that? Do you give testosterone supplements?
Yeah. So we get the woman back into the normal level where you know where her system needs to be. And then we, you know, we work with the couple. There's always other issues. The couple's angry with them. There's mm-hmm. you know, things that aren't going right. There may have been affairs. There may have been whatever, jealousies. It can go on and on. But each, you know, and each couple's therapist knows how to work with those particular issues. So we work as a whole group that does also psychotherapy in my clinic and couples therapy and also sex therapy. So depends on where we want to start, and that couple decides they want to start, and then we just start moving forward. But the first thing is you gotta have the woman's biology be back in balance. So a lot of women, of course, are very relieved. They think it's either his fault or his sexual technique has all. She thinks he's just become a lousy lover.
Oh, poor baby. Oh dear. Well, so this brings me to a little bit of curiosity too. I mean, the body for both males and females, the body's hormone levels drop off, but for the women, it's as menopause progresses. And you don't want to be supplementing testosterone forever. Do you just accept a decline in your sexual interest, or are there ways to stimulate it without adding hormones?
Of course, yeah, there are. I mean, just basically being that one of the best ways to get your own body and adrenal glands to make more testosterone for yourself, guess what it is? It's exercise.
Oh, really?
Yes, okay. Yes. So, uh-huh. You know, 25 to 35 minutes of cardiovascular exercise per day will get your body to make more testosterone. So that is a natural way you can kind of beef it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also healthy for all kinds of other reasons. So it depends on how, by the time women get to my clinic at UCSF, it's usually been going on for a lot of years, and it's, you know, it's at a crisis level. But, you know, if regular doctors were starting to do what we call preventative medicine more in their offices, they would know about this. They would know about this, and they would start measuring, and they would start, like, you know, advising, you know, health, diet, exercise, and things to women way before they get to this crisis. And then about 20% of women where this happens, that they get pretty low during their 40s, you know, wouldn't happen to them because they would be being followed by their doctors in a preventative medicine way.
Well, listen, Dr. Luann, I know that you are a very busy woman, but I'm going to make a suggestion that you issue a press release before Valentine's on this topic. I think you could save a lot of people a lot of pain.
It's not a box of chocolates that she needs. It's a lab test.
And some exercise. Get her moving, guys.
Yeah, just get her out. Take her on an active vacation.
There you go. I'm serious. I think that would really be wonderful to get that out in the news, because we do need. So So now we want to be loving, and we have different ideas of what love is. One is talking and relationship and cuddling, and the other is sex and physical. What are some ways that people can lovingly, kindly, without a lot of pain, bring these two modes together?
You mean to bring the two modes of the cuddling, talking desire versus the sexual desire, right?
Yes, so that we actually do love one another, you know, or are open
to
it.
I mean, I think I think for women, just knowing that the sexual act and that a man is not going to feel loved unless that's part of his life in most situations. And so I think when she knows that, then women are very clever. they can figure out things. So I think that's one piece of it, is that there has to be that kind of give and take. And he has to know that what she needs from him, and most men really want to be your hero. They really want to please us women. They do, in all kinds of ways, not just sexually, but in other ways too. If what pleases her is to kind of cuddle or go for a nice, you know, walk holding hands and talking, or go to the coffee shop and talk, or to cuddle after sex, or, you know, that necessary cuddle talk piece of her day is almost like an essential vitamin for a woman. It's an essential nutrient. Mm-hmm. We need that. I'll tell my husband, and my husband is a lovely, warm, caring guy, but he's not much of the kind of cuddle, whatever. And I'll tell him in the kitchen in the morning, I haven't had my hug and kiss this morning. You know?
right.
He goes, he walks over from the toaster and gives me my hug and kiss. And, you know, my husband's a neuroscientist, so he's got the scientific mind, and he's, you know. And he, you know, a lot of times also for women, you know, when we come home, I can remember coming home from work and saying, you know what happened today, da 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 da, and he'll say, you know what you should do, and he says it very quickly, you know what you should do. And I'm just feeling like, how can he know to tell me what I should do when he hasn't heard what happened and how I feel?
Right.
And so, because really what I want to hear from him is, I want to hear from him, honey, I know how you feel. I want him to empathize with me. I don't want him to fix it. So in the male brain book, I talk in chapter 6 about how males want to fix it. And so the solution my husband and I have made is I put a little yellow sticky on his computer where he's often sitting, and it says, honey, I know how you feel.
Oh, that's
so
nice.
So it's his script. It's like when I come to talk with him about something I'm upset about, he's supposed to read it, honey, I know how you feel. it actually has worked because it gives him that pause, and it's funny, it was scripted and it was supposed to be just a joke, but actually, you know, it has worked.
It really does work. Yeah, it's one of those things that works even when you know what he's doing. You know, I developed I'm married to a neurosurgeon.
Another one of those fix-it male brains.
Right, exactly. And I just wanted to mention, when we were dating, he didn't grow up in a family that was very expressive emotionally anyway. So I used to grab his hand or put his arm around my shoulders or something, because he never would think of it. And after a year, one day, he put his arm around my shoulder, and I noticed it and went, oh, my gosh, what happened? And he said, oh, I found out I like it.
Oh, is that sweet? Is that sweet?
We all
learn, just like you were talking in the other segment that we talked about, you know, your learning experience and what you took from that very, very stressful environment. You know, we all learn to do behaviors in our families of origin.
Right.
Where we were either touched, hugged, kissed, whatever, and we all grow up expecting that's in an environment, that's what we need and expect and want, the nurturing part of that. And if you've grown up in kind of a family where it doesn't do the physical expression, and you marry to someone who really needs and wants that, we women or whoever, we have to train our partner, and not to feel like it's their fault, not to put the blame on them, but to realize they can learn and choose to do it, and they can be trained to do it, and they like your husband, they may even like it.
Yeah. Well, and I also, I was teaching a course for probation officers on gender communication. And I came up with this idea because I heard so many men say, I don't know what a woman wants. And I realized that my husband was saying the same thing. And I felt pretty clear about knowing what I wanted, but I realized I hadn't been telling him. So I developed a technique, and the technique is if I wanted to tell him something, I would go to him and I'd say, listen, I'd like to tell you something, but I just want you to listen. I don't want any feedback right now. Can you do that for me? Or I would say, I want to tell you something, and I'm not ready to hear, to have you fix it or to hear negatives, but if you have anything positive, I'd like to hear. Or thirdly, I would say, I'm open to whatever you have to say, and get his agreement before I tell him so that he knows what I'm looking for. And that has worked really well.
Yeah, I think once we preface whatever it is we're going to need from them, and it requires that we kind of know ourselves enough to preface it that way. I mean, it took me years also to learn that, even though I know. And, you know, women, the difference in the male and female is that women talk out loud often to figure out how they feel about something.
Yes.
Men do a lot of silent processing more in their heads. And I think if the two genders, if, you know, in a couple, if there's some understanding of that, that's not true. About 10% of men are more the, like, they talk out loud to figure out how they feel. About 10% of men, about 10% of women are more the silent types. But, you know, the average male and female end up being a little more like he's processing quietly in his head, and she's wanting him to talk to her more about that process. He's silent about it, and she doesn't realize that that's how he works out what he's thinking about his feelings. She needs to say it out loud to know how she feels and to kind of get things out. So just honoring the individual differences in a couple and feeling like that not only is that okay, being curious about how the other one processes in their head, both their feelings and their ideas.
Yes, I totally agree with you. It's time for our next break, and one of the questions I have in my mind that maybe you'd be willing to answer after the break has to do with those people who have the kind of brain that attracts them to their same sex, or who feel that they are or believe that they're transsexual, that they're in the wrong body. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about what you've learned
sure,
about those
very
things.
Interesting topic. Yes, I have a lot of patients who come to me that are either transgender or same-sex attracted, and that would be fine. We can talk about that.
Yeah, transgender.
Break.
Yeah, good. All right, we're talking today with Luann Brizendine, MD. She's the author of The Female Brain and The Male Brain. If you have questions, ask them on our chat or call us toll-free 800-630-7858. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com.
Welcome.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I'm Eileen Dillon, and we're talking today with Dr. Luann Brizendine. She's the author of The Male Brain and the author of The Female Brain, and those books are very well written. If you have interest in this topic, I really encourage you to get those books and read them. So, Dr. Luann, before the break, I was asking you about what you can tell us about people whose brains, who end up identifying as gay, lesbian, or transsexual.
Sure,
transgendered. I'm saying the wrong word. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Transgendered.
So thank you for saying that about the books, because they're very, very easy to read. You don't need any science to read them, right?
They're so fascinating. They just pull you, the first few sentences pulls you in. You don't want to put it down. I'm quite serious about this.
I just wanted to encourage your readers, because I did it in a way that was, nobody needs to know any science to read it. So
it's just as fascinating and easy to listen to or to read as you are to listen to on the show here. That's what they need to know.
Very kind of you. So let's go to that. I mean, this is one of the biggest questions I always get from my audiences about what happens in same-sex attraction and what, you know, what. And so the first point I always make is, it's not like some kind of a moral decision that you make at some point in your life. That basically what we understand so far, in both of the books, I put the female brain and sexual orientation, and then in the male brain is one called the male brain and sexual orientation. Both of those I've written appendixes on everything that we know biologically currently about that. And truth be said, we don't know very much or not enough about that yet. But what we do know is that, for example, same-sex attracted males, for example, the gay male brain, there have been several studies done in different parts of the world. The one that comes to mind is one that's been done in Sweden where they took – do you know what a pheromone is? A pheromone is what we call an airborne hormone, and usually those are odors that we can't quite smell. It's not like a smell, but it's basically maybe a faint smell. But they took pheromones from males and pheromones from females, and they tested gay and straight males to see what they liked. And the opposite sex males liked the pheromones. Their brains lit up in an active area of pleasure and excitement when they smelled the pheromones of females. The same sex attracted, the male attracted to male guys, when they smelled the pheromones of females, they did not like it. And yet when they smelled the pheromones from other males, their brains lit up in excited and interested brain areas.
Wow.
So that's just one example of several studies that have looked at various ways in which the same-sex attracted male brain and also the same-sex attracted female brain are attracted to same-sex versus opposite sex. So the feeling and understanding now is amongst most biologists and neurobiologists is that your same-sex attraction or your opposite sex attraction is something that you're born with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you get to a very interesting area where you may have someone that has a brain of the brain of the opposite sex and a body. Their body and their brains are not in the same direction, so that the person feels that they are female and yet they have a penis and all they look male, or vice versa, they have female genitalia and feel male. And the way that we think about that in the biology is that basically it's the male brain in a female body, or the female brain in a male body. Now, there have been some fabulous, fabulous shows done on this that you may have caught. There's a really, really lovely couple of shows done on 2020. With Barbara Walters on young children, preschool children, and all the way up, that basically feel that they're basically may look female and they're dressing as males, or they may have been born as a male and start dressing and playing with everything female. Of course, then pediatricians and the whole medical community is that in term, it, some individuals would like to transition to having the same body as their brain is. And this, of course, is done in many, many steps and stages. There's a whole protocol, different places in the country that will do this. And then the final stage is the surgery to make the genitalia the same as the same sex as the brain. This has been done for many, many years in the Netherlands. There's a hospital there that's been doing this for 25 or 30 years. In America, it's done in various medical centers around the country as well as at UCSF. So that's currently what is known about what you asked me about. Is there any other thought you want to have?
Well, the one question that I and we may not have the answer to this, is there a cause, hormonally speaking, if the young brain gets flooded with estrogen or testosterone, is there a deficit or a surfeit of one of those? Okay.
Right. So correct. So the group that they do, the group that's been the most studied, is a group of females. There's a genetic abnormality called congenital adrenal syndrome. And basically, it's where the adrenal glands all during fetal life pump out huge amounts of testosterone. Now, that doesn't, the males who have this, it just means they may have more testosterone flooding their brain, right? That, so they end up having male genitalia, male bodies, and male brain when they're born. The girls, however, end up having female bodies, the XX, meaning that they're going to be female, end up having female genitalia. They may have actually an enlarged clitoris and labia that may look a little male. And, you know, 30 years ago, they used to look at the birth, they would decide that they had what's called ambiguous genitalia. Uh-huh. And the delivering doctors would decide on which gender to assign that child. That was before genetic testing was available. Now, if there's any question, they just do the genetic testing and see if it's XX or XY the baby is, and then of course they'll assign the genetic sex they will assign to the child, no matter what the genitalia look like. But that's a whole process and procedure that they're very much better about now than they used to be. So those girls though who got all that testosterone during their fetal life, they have masculinized genitalia a bit, but not up the full-blown penis and testicles, of course, and they do have ovaries. But they, about 50% of them, will do much more what's called rough-and-tumble play. They'll prefer boys' toys. They want to hang out with the boys, and about half of those girls are same-sex attracted.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the most studied group of the hormonal effects on behavior and brain that there are to date.
Thank you. Thank you. That's really helpful. So,
and I talk about this. If people want to read more about it, they can read about that in Chapter 1 of The Female Brain.
Thank you. And your books can be obtained in any bookstore, correct?
Yeah, I think they're both out in paperback, and I think they're out for like 12, 10, Amazon, whatever they're on, $9, $10, $12. So they're very easily available everywhere.
So it is possibly a very good Valentine's Day present.
And I was going to say, lots of males, they'll get the two books and then they'll exchange. Give her the male brain and then he gets the female brain.
And then they share. Well,
a little love potion. If they want to change, they want to turn straight to the sex chapter, and I never get interviewed, by the way, about the sex chapter. It's Chapter 4 in the male brain and Chapter 4 in the female brain. It's both of those chapters are called The Brain Below the Belt, and it's about all of the sexual details in male and female sexuality, orgasm, arousal, satisfaction, hormones, all of that.
We'll just have to have you back for that show. We'll be the first. I'm game for that. And, you know, we are coming up on Valentine's Day, and we recognize now that we have differences in our brains and different expectations of what love is all about. But the question that I have is, knowing this, knowing that we have different hardwired attributes, How can we help one another, males and females? How can we help one another to get to the point of greatest love in our lives or feeling very loved? How can we work with that?
So if you think about how we feel loved, it's because someone sees our authentic self and accepts us and validates us for who we really are authentically. And so if you're a partner, the way to give that kind of love to your partner is to, your man, be curious about what her own authentic self and her authentic state is, and curious about how she may see it differently than you. And if you're a female, becoming curious about how your guy sees things and how he feels about something in a really deeply authentic way. And that is the magic formula for love.
Wow. One of the skills of love is to have a genuine interest in the other person, which is what I feel like you just described. That's a beautiful answer. So we need to wrap up the show now. Is there anything else that we need to know about male and female brains in order to live better lives? Is there any final thing you'd like to tell us?
The biggest thing I think to know is that our brain circuits are more similar than they are different, but that they are running on different hormonal fuels. The male brain is running on 10 times more testosterone fuel, and the female is running on a lot more estrogen and oxytocin fuel. So we are running on a bit different fuel. So we may see the world through male-colored glasses or female-colored glasses. That's probably the bottom line.
That's a lovely way to put it. Well, I want to thank you for sharing your remarkable abilities. When I start reading about all that you've done in your young life, I'm very, very impressed. And your writing, as I said, I really enjoyed reading. So let me remind our readers that your books are The Female Brain, our listeners, excuse me, that are The Female Brain and The Male Brain, and they're available everywhere, and that your website is drluann.ning.com. And it's very easy to find you on the internet if you just...
Yeah, you can just Google the female brain and Dr. Luann, you'll get it right away.
Great pictures, too. So I know
thank you so much.
It's just been a pleasure having you, and I'm serious. I'm going to invite you back for the whole discussion on the brain and sexuality.
You may be the first one to interview me on the chapter 4, the sex the secret sex chapters.
I'm going for it. The secret sex chapters that are in plain
view. Yeah, the one
view
in the male brain is only 11 pages long, so that one's a short one.
Your books don't have brown wrappers on them, do they?
No, but that chapter should have.
Okay. Well, I'd very much like to thank you for all that you are doing to help us get along better here in the world, and also thank you for your time being on Full Power Living with us today. I appreciate
if
it very much.
If you want to come down and see me at the Yes I Can conference down in San Jose on the 17th, 18th, 19th of March, they're welcome to come down to San Jose and come see me and talk to me.
And where can they find more about the Yes I Can conference? Just Google Yes I Can conference?
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be in San Jose, and it's basically anyone can come. It's an open conference to anyone who would like to come. There's going to be a lot of great stuff there on relationships and caring and love and, you know, basically all kinds of how to get along with others and how to know more about yourself. So it's a whole 3 days conference, and I'm going to be speaking on the Sunday, I think, at 2 o'clock.
Wonderful. Oh, I'd love to be able to do
that. Come see me and introduce yourself.
Okay, I'll do that. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Luann.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Next week, February 9th, be with us as Suzanne Taylor Scheer tells us how to affect our soul reunion, fulfilling our longing to be in union with infinite love. Join us live on Thursday, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for our next powerful experience on Full Power Living. We want to thank all of you who've been with us today, and our producer extraordinaire, Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media. Thank you for your great backup over all these years. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon. Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Hey, you, with a rhinestone dog collar. Between us dogs, I just convinced my human to upgrade to a new home with a 1,200-square-foot bathroom. I think she called it a yard. With Wells Fargo's 3% down mortgage option, my human realized a new home was within reach, and I only gave her puppy eyes once. Get your human to talk to a mortgage consultant or learn more at wellsfargo.com/woof.
Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Down payments as low as 3% on a fixed-rate loan require mortgage insurance. Ask a home mortgage consultant about loan requirements. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., Equal Housing Lender, NMLSR ID 399801.
Hey, you, with a rhinestone dog collar. Between us dogs, I just convinced my human to upgrade to a new home with a 1,200-square-foot bathroom. I think she called it a yard. With Wells Fargo's 3% down mortgage option, my human realized a new home was within reach, and I only gave her puppy eyes once. Get your human to talk to a mortgage consultant or learn more at wellsfargo.com/woof.
Wells Fargo Home Mortgage. Down payments as low as 3% on a fixed-rate loan require mortgage insurance. Ask a home mortgage consultant about loan requirements. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., Equal Housing Lender, NMLSR ID 399801.